please take a seat. So this morning, I am joined on stage by three wonderful women. Each of them either hold senior positions on their staff teams in their churches or are married to someone who does. And they all have various ministry responsibilities at the churches they're at to serve the cause of the gospel. And we're going to hear from each of them about what has been working in their churches when it comes to reaching the lost in their context. We're going to hear from each of them one by one, just to give you an idea of where this is going. They're going to share three things that have been working, one by one, and then we'll delve in to their answers and ask a few more questions. But here we go. First up, we have Catherine Jackson. And you are at Cornerstone Church, Nottingham. Before we hear from her, we've got a bit of a video that gives us a flavour of what life is like up in Nottingham.
We are Cornerstone Church, Nottingham. We are a large, inter-ethnic, intergenerational church positioned on the outskirts of the city centre. We're really excited by the people who are coming into Cornerstone and who are exploring Christianity. Three things we think are significant for our evangelism are having an online presence, prioritising gospel proclamation in all of our ministries, and being relationally warm and welcoming.
Hi, Jafar, thank you so much for talking to me. Now, you became a Christian here at Cornerstone in Nottingham quite recently. You were baptised last November, which was really exciting. Could you just share with us something that helped you in your journey of faith that we did here at Cornerstone?
I found the evangelistic course Cornerstone runs really helpful. It was good to have an opportunity to ask lots of questions and to hear that there are very good answers.
Great, thank you very much, Jafar, thank you.
Wonderful. Catherine, you are one of the directors of ministry at Cornerstone Church, Nottingham, which is a role that I think many people will hear not necessarily know what that means. You said another time that another role name might be chief fixer. That might be a bit better. But why don't you just give us an idea of what kind of work you do at Cornerstone?
I mean, really, I think my job is a lot like other people on church staff teams. It's a kind of fun blend of lots of different things. So I lead our women's Bible studies. I do pastoral care with kind of women and family. I actually do quite a lot of pastoral care of the staff team. I chair some of our staff meetings. I'm involved in some of the training and development of people who are training for full-time ministry. So kind of lots of different things. And anything random that doesn't kind of fit anywhere else seems to come to me.
You mentioned in the video what those three things are that have been significant when it comes to reaching the lost in Cornerstone, but could you tell us a bit more about those three things? Remind us what they are.
Sure. So I think we are having a bit of a kind of quiet revival moment. We have got people who seem to be just coming in, except we're not entirely sure they are just coming in. We think they've quite often checked us out online before they come in. And what I mean by that is that they may have kind of watched some of our services, which we live stream on YouTube, or they might have had a bit of an explore of our website or something like that. And I think that makes sense, doesn't it? You know, I don't go on holiday somewhere that I haven't done some investigation of. I check out if I'm going to book an Airbnb. I read the reviews. I think about it before I go. And actually, even more so if it's something you're quite nervous about. So I do think people are often looking at us online before they're coming through the door. And I'm kind of sharing anecdotal stuff there, but I do think it is more than anecdotal. So I think the EA's Talking Jesus kind of research says that about 26% of people who are investigating Christianity go to Google first. So I do think having an online presence does help people to kind of come through the door. Then the other thing that we said in the video was kind of gospel proclamation. Now, I realise that every church context is different and what you're doing in your situations might be different, but we really do feel that anytime we evaluate a ministry, decide to put a new one on, decide what we might kind of wind up, that we do really want to have strategies for sharing the gospel in that kind of context. So whether it's our toddler group, whether it's our holiday lunch club group, whether it's a craft event, we want to know how we are going to share the gospel and be quite clear that that's kind of absolutely central to what we're doing. And if it's not really happening because we kind of just hoped it would happen kind of accidentally, then that ministry probably would end up getting wound up, I think. We want to have that right at the kind of heart of what we're doing. And then also, and I think this kind of sticks the other two together, is the relational warmth bit. So if you go back to that kind of nervous inquirer who's looked online, done a bit of research, thought about coming into church, and then plucked up the courage one Sunday to come, of course it's really important they hear the gospel clearly proclaimed. But actually, even to hear that, to get beyond their nervousness about being in, I think they need to feel a warm welcome, to feel that we're glad that they are with us, to feel that we want to get to know them, to learn their name, to remember their name, to invite them back. So I think the three things do kind of work together. People are often checking us out online first. We want to make sure they do actually hear the gospel at kind of whatever they come into. And we just want to surround all of that with relational warmth, because I think it helps buys the gospel a hearing. It gives us a bit of traction with people if they feel warmly invited and included.
Right. Thank you, Catherine. We'll hear more about that soon. Next up, we have Linda. Linda works for Co-Mission and London City Mission, as well as Globe Church. So she's got her hands full a lot of the time. We're going to see a bit of what church life is like at Globe just now.
Hi, I'm Linda Olcock, and this is Globe Church.
Hey, so this is Wes and Adrian. He recently got baptised at our church, and I just want to ask you guys, what was it about Globe Church that's helped you on your faith journey?
The biggest thing for me has been being able to really dissect scripture and understand exactly what the context was at the time, and bringing the Bible to life and helping me implement it in my day-to-day, which has been amazing.
Oh, fantastic. And how about you?
Yeah, look, mine's very similar to him, I'll be honest. I've always gone towards the church, and it's been read the scripture, move on, do the next one, but it's going very much, break it down, make it very understandable, very acceptable to life, and it's been very, very helpful for me and how I'm doing.
Oh, amazing, guys. Thanks so much.
Linda, your role at Globe is, I think, ministry leader for discipleship, but like Catherine, you have some more fun names, like Globe Church Mum and Chief Gap Filler.
Yeah, I think that largely encapsulates my entire role, if I'm entirely honest. So I mentor a number of people, staff team, missionaries. Some, we call them alumni, people who've moved on from Globe and end up in significant positions in other churches. I teach on some of our theological training, which we call Globe Equip. I oversee a few serving teams. I counsel quite a few people in the sort of pastoral care settings, particularly to do with marriage. And one of the things I do is I read. I feel like that's quite unusual on staff teams. We're all so busy. I actually love reading. And I think, therefore, I'm often the person saying, maybe we could have a look at this, or I read this brilliant book and I think this. So I guess I may be a little bit of a channel of ideas. In fact, I have hundreds of ideas, almost all of which should never happen. One of our elders said to me, Linda, ideas are cheap. And the last thing I would say that's significant, and I've over 10 years, I've had a lot of feedback on this. People say that seeing me, I used to run the catering team, we have a meal each week after church, and they said that seeing me serving each week taught them more about leadership than anything else I ever said. So I do now deliberately throw myself into serving in different ways. I actually don't think it's a waste of our time. I think this is what Jesus said leadership was. Leading is serving in Jesus' economy. So that's been really cool. Something I now actively embrace rather than feel like, oh, I really ought to have delegated this to somebody else.
Sure, thanks. Could you share with us three things that have been aiding the mission of reaching the lost at Globe?
Yeah, sure. I think friendship evangelism has been a really... Like, I know that sounds old news, but it really, we are in a season at the moment of this. For example, Wes and Adrian in the video came along with one of the leaders of one of our small groups who I work alongside. Then I'm doing Christianity Explored, like reading through Mark's Gospel with a couple of girls separately at the moment, both of whom came just through people in church. And yeah, we don't get casual drop-ins like a regular church does because we're a school. So it's really important that people bring their friends. I think maybe when I think about it, good follow-up has been quite a key factor in that the friend has come into church. But then I suppose it's partly because we have a meal. Like, people stay around for ages afterwards, and the majority of the church stay for a meal. Even if they don't want to eat, they just get that this is what we do as a church. We care about being relational. And I think often it's in conversations afterwards, like that one of the guys in my small group brought a friend who leads his book group. And she said to me, oh, I've been reading Mere Christianity. We got talking. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Maybe we could set up a mini book group and read it together. And then she said, well, I don't really agree with C.S. Lewis on a number of things. I was like, well, why don't we read the primary documents together? And she was like, oh, I'd love that. So I'm like, oh, yeah, let's read Mark's Gospel. What a win. So, yeah, I think that sometimes it is just creating, I think it's your relational warmth that, like, you know, actually having churches where a friend comes in and they feel like, oh, I'd like to come back to this. Second thing, sorry, I need to hurry up. Newcomers and student ministry. We have a lot of new people coming to Globe. I don't recognise a third of people each week, and I actually am married to the pastor, so I ought to. But it's quite well organised. We have good leaders who are warm and really good at getting people's numbers and following them up. And so I think that's been really significant. And this year, what we've done, we used to just bundle all the newcomers into one group and they'd squeeze into somebody's lounge. And if you didn't like crowds, then that was bad news for you and you went to another church. But this year we capped each group at 20. So when it got to 20 people, we started a new group, which was really complicated and caused me a big headache. And it was a lot of admin. And every time you've got just three people in a group, you're panicking. But I think what Phil Alcock said yesterday in his TED style talk about people are lonely and they want friendships, I think that's really key. And by keeping the groups quite small and tight and the consistency of people turning up each week meant that people actually loved the group and kept coming back to it. So previous years we've had one newcomers group. Now we have three this year. So we've had over double the amount of people stick with us. And I do think it is that they feel seen and known and loved. The third thing is partnerships. We partner with London City Mission through Webber Street. And we've had one guy come off the streets, become a Christian, and several people come into church through that ministry. They also partnered with us in helping us, I want to say do door-to-door, but it isn't. Doug Cruz leads this incredible, he has had this idea and he's seen loads of people come to faith through it, where you deliver things to people, their doors, but what you're really trying to do is meet people. And I went out with him as part of their training and he just loves people. He's unbelievably good. He could be shoving, I don't know, leaflets about the Royal Mail through people's doors. It wouldn't matter. It's not about what he's shoving through the doors. He puts through the Good News newspaper. But he's just wanting to talk to people. Mm. And he's amazing. And he just would do it month after month after month. And he saw loads of people come to faith. So we partnered with him on that. And then the third thing, my last thing, we partnered with Safe Families, which is a Christian charity that reaches families, they're connected through social workers with families on the brink of their children going into care, and partners with churches to get people to go in and help those families to stop the kids having to go into care. We've partnered with them and that's been incredible. So we've now got a family joined us through that ministry, and they're really keen to, they've got lots of people in London who, families who need help and very few churches. So that's a great opportunity we found to actually reach out into our local community and reach people really kind of on the fringes and at the bottom.
Right. Thank you, Linda. We'll definitely hear more about that in just a second. And last but not least, we have Sean Robinson. Sean is at Cornerstone Church, Liverpool, and we've got a video to watch.
So my name's Freddie. I grew up in East London and I've been in Liverpool for around 6 years now. I grew up in a council estate in London. There was three people that we was always told not to answer the door to. That was the police, the TV licence man, and someone talking about God. And that was our growing up in East London and kind of the kind of rules we followed. As I got older, we went through some tough times with family. My dad became an alcoholic. For a very long time and caused quite a lot of damage to himself. Thankful for the God that he kind of found Jesus through AA meetings, has become clean and become a Christian through the AA rooms. And then as he progressed in his Christianity and his faith, he tried to get me to follow, tried to tell me about God and Jesus of who he was, but I wasn't really interested, to be totally honest. thanks to the Lord and his sovereign stuff and thanks for what he's done for us. We moved to Liverpool in 2018, and I'm thankfully through God that I moved across the road from the pastor of this church, who's Steve Robinson, who's now my best friend. And it was just the way that they lived, the way that I could see they were so different. It was something crazy and amazing about these people that I wasn't familiar with. I was used to people being quite tough, rugged. And the people that I was introduced to was just something I was not used to, and something was totally different about who they were. It was actually my wife, Charlotte, that actually first went over to the Robinson's house and spent time with them and people from the church for a party. And she phoned me up whilst I was at work and said, I've been to a party with loads of people from church and I've never met anyone so nice and so kind. And that was kind of the progression into spending time with God's people, spending time with Steve and the family, for walks in the park. And my heart and my mind was just, first time I come to church was just changed. I emotionally connected. Her heart was changed almost instantaneously with what they were saying. It's been a progression for me. I feel like my life's been dramatically changed through the church and people, and first and foremost of what God's done for me. So, it's been a amazing journey.
Great hearing that story, wasn't it? Sean, so you're part of Cornerstone Church Liverpool and you're married to the senior pastor, Steve, who is here. You don't have a role title, but I believe a great title that we could give you is church feeder, am I right?
Yeah.
And known by your husband as the First Lady.
That's just him, he's
tell us what you do for the church during the week.
Yeah, so I think feeding is kind of part of the culture of our church. Hospitality, just kind of living life together, is a huge deal in our church. And so, I've got a house, I can cook, so I like people. So it's a natural combination. So there's often people in our home being fed by me. So yeah, that's what we do. I also I run the toddler group. I co-host our gospel community. I help with the creche outreach. Do I do anything else specifically? I'm kind of around people, helping people, marriage support.
Yeah.
If people are struggling, I'll kind of meet with them, that kind of thing, yeah.
Great, thank you. Tell us some of these three things that have been helpful with reaching the lost when it comes to ministry life in Cornerstone.
Yeah, great, thank you. So I think the first thing is actually something that is kind of basic, but I think we forget, and that is just that being the church, like having the confidence in who we are as the church. Like, the church is great. Like, the church family is great. John 13 says that by this all people will know that you're my disciples, that you love each other. And I think if we do that really, really well, that's super evangelistic. Mm-hmm. If we're living and behaving as a loving family, if we're actually living out what the Bible says to be, how we should treat each other, bearing with one another, the diversity of people loving and doing life together, I think it's so powerful. It's the hermeneutic of the gospel. People see that and get a picture of who the Lord is and some of the gospel message, and it's compelling. Of course, this assumes, doesn't it, if we're living this wonderful kind of like family life together with the rough and the smooth, but we're kind of loving each other well, it does assume for it to be evangelistic that there's people in your life that are not Christian. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming here that that as we're living as the church, that we are also living amongst non-believers who can then see us living as the church together. The story of the faucets that you just saw on the video, that's Freddie, our neighbour. It's really funny when I listened to that. I didn't do the video, my friend Chedza did it, and I was laughing that Charlotte said she went to a party. So this party was just us having people around for food after church. It actually wasn't a party. So I was thinking, yeah, it's just funny to me that he said that. But again, it's like when you've been in church a long time, these things are very normal to you, like having your front door as a revolving door, or having your kitchen and your living room full of people and just kind of doing life together casually where there's no kind of pretension or keeping up appearances. That's so normal to us. But for the non-believer who's not really been in church much, that's remarkable. And it's a huge gospel story. And so, and then when Freddie said he came into church and he just He is amongst God's people, hearing the proclamation of the gospel, seeing people singing the songs, loving the Lord and how they act with each other. And it was powerful. And so I just think for us to be, yeah, just to love each other really well and fill that out. When our daughter was our eldest daughter was seven, and I'm not going to tell the story because it's super long, but when our eldest daughter was seven, she was diagnosed with a tumour in her spinal cord, which was obviously quite life-changing for us as a family. But I have to say that the way the church surrounded us, loved us, cared for us, meal wrote us, I had a spreadsheet. I got loads of kids, so four kids. So we had a spreadsheet of the different kids and who was looking after them all the time because me and Steve were out of the question, and food, and it was just a powerful witness. And specifically, my non-Christian believers said to me, I wish I was part of a community like this. That's huge. Mm. That's huge. But you do have to be with non-Christians for them to see that. So doing life together well, that's my first point as a church family. Second point is doing life with gospel intentionality. So just doing normal life, so not being something you're not, but with some intentionality, like being intentional of how you can share the gospel. But also I'm going to add into that being honest and vulnerable as well with people. So just be the light wherever God has you. Sometimes we overcomplicate evangelism. We've got to do this big thing. Well, no, God's just got you in a street. He's got you in a workplace. He's got you in that shop right now next to that person. He's got you on a plane next to somebody. Just kind of be the light where you are. Be intentional where you are. So we are a church planting church. And so I think what's good about that is that you're always thinking about being visible in the community. You start off tiny. 50 years ago, we started off as 30. So you're thinking, how can we reach this local place? So we you know, Stephen's obviously the leader, and he said, let's be visible in the community. So we would visit, as the church members, the local coffee shops. And we got to know, being there, coffee is our local coffee shop. There's loads actually where we live, but being there is the closest one, really. And we really got to know well all the church, the owners. And they actually said once, if your church closes, we're going under. Because we would always frequent there. And we got to know the owners really well just because of that. Then their kids started going to Dovedale, where our kids went, so then they got to know more Christians. Then they wanted to organise a Christmas carol around the Christmas tree, so they asked Stephen, because they knew he was a pastor, can you organise some music? So Michael, who's been leading worship, helps with that as well. So you can just see how that kind of visibility helps. There's a guy called Pete who used to go to the coffee shop all the time, and he would see all the pastors have their meetings there. Because our church building, we've only had a bigger one recently, and we didn't have offices. We still don't have offices. So the pastors would often meet on a Monday or Thursday, I'm not sure which actually, in being there. And he thought that they were drug dealers because because everyone knew them, and like they would just get coffee brought to them. I mean, they did pay, but I think it just kind of looked like, you know, got to keep these druggies happy. And then he found out they were pastors, so then that was cool. And so he realised they weren't drug dealers. But it's funny because he noticed them on. And then he would then see Ben, one of our pastors, out and about, because he lives, he had a dog, and Ben lives by the park. We walk the dog. He'd see me and Steve walking our dog on the mystery. Long story short, he got saved and was baptised. Now, what were the ingredients of his salvation? Well, there's many, but one of them was us as a church being visible and intentional. Ben was intentionally talking to Pete because he'd seen him in the coffee shop, but he'd been in the coffee shop first to see Pete and see the regular customers. Sorry, I'm not being quick. Neighbours. Yeah, you all live on a street, so we would encourage our congregation to be intentional with your neighbours. And again, I just want to say, like, persistence is really important here. Me and my husband moved into our house 9 years ago, and I got super excited. You know, I love people, and I love to have people at home. So I invited the whole street, like the whole street. I think I had over 200 pieces of cake. I was doing a fundraiser because I was thinking I was dead clever. I was thinking, do a fundraiser, and then that'll get them in the door more because they won't feel awkward. I was raising money for Ender Treatment Bells, which is when you finish a cancer treatment, to put Ella's story on. I was thinking, oh, people will come because, you know. Anyway, I think three people came, and I was so dejected. Anna, my friend who's here, had to take the cakes to school to try and get the money to buy these bells. And actually, if I'm really honest, I was very faithless because I just didn't do much after that. But then in God's providence, we've, you know, obviously the Forts has become Christians, and we've got some neighbours who we're very intentional with, and they're in our home quite a lot and have been to church quite a few times. So Yeah. I've got another story, but I'm not going to share it because I know I've got time issues. Another visibility piece is the school gate. So if you are picking your kids up, drop them off, hang around, chat, if many of you are doing that together, you get known. The school teachers in my kids' school said, we know the Cornerstone kids. They're all so lovely and they all chat to us. And then we are known quite positively in that school. That Stephen was a governor once. We've got some ladies in our church on the PTA. One of our pastor's wives, she does school trips where the kids come over from the school to our church and hear about the Easter story, etc. But that's all because of the school gate thing. And my last one, which I'll race through, is evangelistic ministries. So things like toddler group. But before I get there, actually, Sunday, every single week we have an evangelistic opportunity, don't we, with a meeting of the church service. So that is just a wonderful opportunity to showcase who the Lord is. And I've already spoken about that. Toddler group, we run a toddler group, but the emphasis is on relationships and building friendships. We've seen loads of gospel fruit through that. Again, it's a piece of the puzzle. It's not the only thing. And I was going to say more about that. I'll just finish with one story which kind of sums up all of those three things. So my friend Nicola is someone I used to work with. I'm a high school teacher by trade and we worked in a school together. So she's a non-Christian colleague. I was always intentional. I mean, I like people, so it's easy for me, but I was always intentional of spending time with her and others of my friends outside of work, building up a friendship. And I was just a Christian with her. I wasn't like specifically sharing the gospel as such. I was just kind of sharing how God's working in my life as he was. And then we went through the Ella story and she saw how I didn't fall apart and the church were amazing. And then I even struggled with sin. Like I really found one of our colleagues very difficult. She's very mean to me. And I explained how I needed to pray about that so much more because it was really affecting me and I needed to give that to God. And she said, I'd love to have a relationship with God like that. And I think she came along to our toddler group as well. I met loads of other Christians and she got saved and she gave her life to Christ. And I baptized her with Stephen. But the point of that story is that she heard the gospel proclaimed through relationship and came along to a group and saw more Christians, etc. So it's all those things work together.
Sean, thank you. We will be delving into some of those things, but we won't have time to delve into all of the things that these ladies have shared. So people can come and talk to you after the break, if that's the case. But Catherine, let me ask you, with your outreach events in Nottingham, you talked about gospel content being central. Could you give us some examples of these types of gospel content in these
Okay, I'll
events?
Give you one that's kind of scrappy and messy. So we run a holiday lunch club. It's meant to deal with kind of food poverty in our local area. So we chatted to our local primary school, can we help and do this like holiday lunch club. It actually hasn't ended up working out quite like that. We have a lot of homeschooling, which we didn't realise in the area, a lot of Muslim women who are homeschooling, and they kind of come en masse to our holiday lunch club. And we are really, really keen that at this holiday lunch club, we are going to share the gospel. So we do a couple of things. We sit around tables for lunch, and we deliberately place one team member at least on each table, so that they're in proximity to Christians. And we have in the centre of the table like questions that they might want to talk about over lunch. And actually the kids are really into this because they get to show off that they can read the question. Some of them are really silly, like, you know, would you rather be invisible or fly? But then there'll be something sensible, like what gives you hope? And the idea is that they'll all share their thoughts, but so will the Christian who is planted on the table. And that actually works really well. And then we do try and do, probably between the main course and pudding, some sort of kind of content, kind of gospely talk. It is chaos. You need a thick skin. These kids want their pudding. That's what they're here for. They're not really that interested. So you've got to make it fun. You've got to make it snappy. But if you work hard at it, you can do it. So let me give you a really quick example of something we did at Easter, totally nicked from Faith in Kids. But we had a hot cross bun and we said, you know, this hot cross bun reminds us of Jesus' death on the cross. That's really important to us. We call it Good Friday, which seems weird, but it's because really that's significant and a little bit of chat about sin. Then we cracked open an Easter egg and said, see, this Easter egg is hollow. That reminds us of the tomb and the fact that the tomb was empty. And we are so excited that the tomb was empty because Jesus is alive. He's not there anymore. Please come along at Easter. And if you don't want to come along at Easter and hear more about it, we've got lots of literature over on the side. Please, like, help yourself. And this Easter, it was just really interesting because they didn't do it while I was standing at the bookstall. While I was standing there, no women came and took anything. When I moved away, quite a little collection came over, spent their time looking and put something in their bags. Now, I think that's quite a big step for a Muslim woman to come in and to take literature kind of with her. So it is chaos. Like, they want their pudding. You're talking over them through that, but you're trying to share the hope of Jesus and always pointing to, like, the next step. Come along to this or take this literature. This is what you can do next.
Thank you. And similarly to that, Sian, with evangelistic ministries at Liverpool, I think a lot of churches do these things weekly, and there are just varying degrees of success. I think some churches will find that their toddler groups are just not that effective. What do you think makes Cornerstone's evangelistic ministries effective in reaching the lost?
Sorry.
So when I did Portwood years ago, there's a line that I've never forgotten, and it was like, if you pray missionally, you'll be missional. And I think it's that combination of genuinely loving people. So they're not projects. I want to get lots of people. Obviously, we want people saved, but it's about the person, not just about that. So it's like, I love you, and because I love you, I want you to be saved. And so I think we genuinely really love the people we come into contact with. And if they don't get saved for 10 years, we're not going to just ditch them and move on to the next person. So I think there's like a genuine affection and love for the people in our community and that we meet in our toddler group or whatever it is, with an intentionality, but a patience with that too. Sure. And again, it goes back to my first point. I just think that I think we do family together well as a church. And I think people do look in and think, I want that. And I think increasingly in our context and our culture right now, that's going to be shining so much brighter. That's going to be so much louder because people are increasingly becoming lonely and disconnected. And so the stark contrast is going to be a huge win for us as a church. Not just us church, every church.
When for church teams and pastors, as they think about partnerships with parachurch organisations, what should they be looking for in those relationships?
I think it varies. So I would say that some partnerships might even be with non-Christian organisations, but very effectively, they can do what you don't need to be doing, and you can be a relational bridge. I think if you're going to work deeply with an organisation, you know, we share a real heartbeat with London City Mission, and that's been a real blessing. I think in that setting, you need clear expectations. It needs to be a good fit for you theologically if you're very close with them. And I'd say it's two-way. We want to really bless LCM as well as them blessing us. But then I think the third thing I'd say is a willingness to stop. I used to partner with an organisation called Blackfriars Settlement nearby. We would together take it in turns to go and collect bakery bread from Gales redistribute in various ways. And after a while, I stopped doing that because I realised it just wasn't evangelistically effective and it was taking a lot of my time. So I do think that's another piece in the puzzle, is actually being willing to say, this is no longer helping us.
Sure. And then staying with you, this is a question for all three of you, but Lindy, if you start. So all of you have kind of said something about relational warmth or friendship evangelism that has been quite significant when it comes to reaching the lost in your churches. How have church teams, pastors, how have they in your churches been thinking about how to actively encourage your congregation in that? How has that changed the culture?
Sure. So I would say that it's contagious. What happened in our church really was that this guy, Lewis, a friend who'd come to his wedding about 6 months later, said that, actually, I'm really interested. This guy came to church, and then after he came to church, more of their friendship group came, so Wes and Adrian then came. They were then baptised. And then I think other people started seeing this happening, and then they started having the confidence. So Jono, who's another newcomer, brought Ariane, who's one of the girls I'm reading Mark with, and and so on and so forth. Now, how do we cultivate that? There was a guy in the a 19th century evangelist, incredible story by a guy called Samuel Chadwick, who's actually a kid in a cotton mill, and the Lord saved him amazingly. And he would pray everywhere he went as an evangelist that the Lord would give him a Lazarus, somebody who is a notorious sinner converted, but that other people would see, and then they would get excited about the gospel. And I share that just to say, if that's not, if that contagious relational warmth is not happening in your church, Samuel Chadwick just prayed that each time God would give him a Lazarus. So I think we need to pray that God would just start lighting that fire in the hearts of our church.
Thank you, Linda. Who else?
Well, Matt slightly stole my thunder yesterday when he said culture eats strategy for breakfast, because that's what I think too. Culture eats strategy for breakfast in this. So we're a big church. We do need to do some strategic things, like our car park is actually just too small for the number of people who come. So we say, please, please, if you're established here, don't park in this car park. Park somewhere else. Be welcoming to the newcomer. But actually, bigger than those strategic things, I think warmth, warm relationships start at the top. And if you are relationally warm with your staff team, amongst your elders, whatever it is, but warmth kind of trickles down, I think. Mm. And you want it to permeate everything. You remember people's names. Our old lead minister used to have a notebook that he would keep people's names in so that you remember them. You know the newcomer. You know who's inquiring. But I think relational warmth is a cultural thing that begins at the top and trickles down.
Sure. Sean?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo all of that. I don't know what else I can say in addition to that. I think we do, as a church gets bigger, it is harder. So that's just the reality. So I think then you have to work harder in smaller contexts. We do something which we've done from the beginning called gospel communities. So we try and model family life as a church in the structure, the construct of a gospel community. So every single week we meet in smaller groups around word and prayer. But first we have a meal together. You look at the Bible, there's so much of Jesus' ministry was done around food and kind of that kind of like chilled out time. That relationship building, it's not just, the importance isn't just the prayer and isn't just the time in the word, it's actually time together and building friendship one with another. And as has been said by Catherine, as an eldership and eldership wife community, we really prioritise that to model that and to, you know, help that spill out, trickle down the culture throughout the church.
And finally, for all three of you, just very quickly, how has your church's prayer lives impacted your evangelism at church?
There's a book, Dynamics of Spiritual Renewal, by Richard Lovelace, and he says that all revivals start by, you can trace them back to a little prayer group. Tim Keller said it was one of his favourite books, and I think I would say that we as a church have been praying for years, and I know I've brought out a load of stories that probably makes you think, oh, Globe are seeing conversions all the time. I would say we're just, after 10 years, finally in a season where people are bringing people in and there's friendship evangelism happening. I think also, like, I pray for people, like I've got, this is my list of people, rubbish in the front of my notebook, sellotaped in, but I think just us individually praying for people is really, really important. And that like trickles down, like you said.
We are really blessed with this cohort of elderly people, including my parents, who just pray and pray and pray. And they get up early in the morning and they pray on Zoom together. Mm. And we pray before our evening meetings. And I have to say, I need to be kicked by them. They are better at it than I am, and they are modelling it for us. And they are really good at both being gracious and quite challenging around that. Yeah. So I do have a lady who is, she is so good to me. She rebukes me regularly, and she will just say, are you praying enough? Are you praying enough? Is the church praying enough? Yeah. And I am so grateful for her.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about the revival being beginning with prayer. We're a replant, and 15 years ago, my husband and I and a team of 15 joined an existing dying church of 15. And there have been a small group of elderly women who have been praying for years. And then, you know, we're 15 years on, and, you know, there's been various church plants from our church and things. And so you just think, oh, yeah, thank you, Lord, that you've put it on their hearts to pray. They didn't know what they could do to grow the church and the local community. They got on their knees and they prayed, and the Lord answered it in an amazing way. And I think the point I made before about praying missionally makes you missional. If you're praying for people, you're going to then speak to them intentionally. The piece I said before about that kind of just doing natural life intentionally, I think that's where it comes from, prayer. So I think it's just that encouragement. Recently, we've been doing our gospel communities for us all to have three people because we probably all know more than three non-believers, but who are the three that we're in communication with regular, who we'd like to pray for? And we've put that as like a focus point for prayer to try and keep our gospel communities missional, because really quickly, I'm sure you can all empathize this, really quickly we can just be a holy huddle that just likes each other and enjoys food together and ticks that box of church attendance, etc. So we really want to keep outward focus, and that starts with prayer, I think.
I would say actually that exactly happened in the previous church plant we were in. I can trace the growth of that church plant back to the three people who were in that church. It was like, it wasn't really a revitalization, but they'd been praying for years that there'd be revival in their little church. It wasn't exactly how they expected, but I actually think it was in answer to their prayers that our new church plant had started.
Amazing. So encouraging, guys. Thank you so much. Shall we give them a hand?